Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got another really exciting show lined up. We're here at the venue of the National Tribal Health Conference. It's September of 2025. We're in the Phoenix, Arizona area, and we have just got some amazing people in our virtual studio, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. First, across from me, Marcella Morton. Marcella, tell us a little bit about who you are.
I'm Marcella Morton from Westville, Oklahoma. I have been in education 49 years. I retired from public school and took another job as college and career instructor. And I retired from that job and took another job with Echota Behavioral Health. And for the last going on 5 years, I've been going into the school systems and talking to our high school kids about mental health.
Tremendous. We want to hear more of your story. And I'm going to just let my listening audience know, Marcella is here especially because you are an inspiration to our associate producer, Dr. Joni Bakavoy, shared with me off air that you guys have known each other for a number of years. She's been inspired by your health journey, your community work. We'll talk more about that. But you, Marcella, have got someone sitting across from you who's a special person in your life. And there's a real interesting story about how you guys met. Tell us that story and then introduce who else is here with us.
Okay. My friend Caleb Proctor. We worked together at Echota Behavioral Health. I was at a suicide walk that our resource sponsored, and I was behind the registration table. And as people would register and they started coming in droves at the end, they would need a t-shirt. And so I was in charge of making sure everybody got a t-shirt, and I kind of got swamped. And so I was back there trying to make sure this guy got a large or small or medium, and just didn't ask for help. But I felt a tap on my shoulder, and I turned and looked at this face, and he was just looking at me, and he said, "Do you need help?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "What do you want me to do?" And I said, "Just help me get everybody a t-shirt." And boy, we dove into the t-shirts, and within maybe 10 minutes, it kind of calmed down, and I finally got a chance to look at this person that had offered to help me, and it was the face of Caleb Proctor. And you know, the first words he ever said to me is, "Do you need help?" And he's been helping me ever since.
Wow.
Yeah, we are really good at team teaching. We like to team teach. So, and we've got an event coming up for the Alt-Ed in Tahlequah that we're going to team teach, and I can hardly wait for that day because we work so well together.
Caleb, tell us about this. How long ago was it that you and Marcella connected with that offer of assistance?
I believe that would be 2 years ago now, because I've been with Echota Behavioral Health for a year.
Okay.
So after the walk, I got invited to a talking circle training while I was doing some environmental and climate change work in Baltimore. So I got a text message from someone else at Echota Behavioral Health asking if I could attend talking circle training. I didn't know if I was going to be back in time. So once I landed back in Tahlequah, I went ahead and accepted that invite and then showed up at the John Hare Cultural Museum, which is the United Ketua Band's museum. And I walked into the room, and then I see a bunch of people I think I've seen before, but I'm involved in the community a lot, as well as Echota Behavioral Health. So I had seen them around.
Okay.
And then we had a, what was it, a four-day training. And like I said, they look familiar, but, I just kind of sat off on my own and I started reading through this manual, and then Marcella and then our manager, Brittany, came to sit by me. And then that's whenever Marcella reminded me, "Hey, aren't you the one that, you know, came and helped me out at the walk?"
Well, I was okay. Like,
"I don't know, but it sounds like me."
Fair enough.
But ever since then, I helped out with the first Stronger Together event. Brittany had asked me to help out with our stomp dance, and I've been active in our stomp dance since I was a little kid. So I went ahead and accepted that invite. And then I invited the team to a couple of my presentations at the Symposium on the American Indian at Northeastern State University. So they attended that, and I was kind of floating in between school and jobs. So I was just seeing where I needed to be. And then Marcella came up to me at the powwow saying, "Hey, we need you on our team." Mm. And I was kind of like, "I don't know what that means." You know, but all right, you know, I'll think about it. And then I think just a few weeks later, I did my paperwork, and then I was on the prevention team for Echota Behavioral Health.
So Marcella, tell us about this. What is Echota Behavioral Health? What is that all about?
We have an office in Tahlequah. We have office in Jay. We have an office in Kansas, an office in Tulsa, and we're getting ready to open one in Stillwell, Oklahoma. And it is serving natives and non-natives. Mm. And we have therapists, and I think we have 11 therapists there at Tahlequah, but it's just for behavioral health, and there's so many people in our area in Tahlequah that need it in the surrounding area. I don't actually get to work with the therapists because I go out into the schools, as so does Caleb, but, you know, it's just an amazing place that people can come to and get help, and they don't turn anyone away.
So, Caleb, you have formal training. And is it education, mental health services? What is your background in?
I have an associate's in social work and a bachelor's in Indigenous and American Indian Studies. And my focus in that was social and environmental justice is how I approached my research topics. But while at Haskell, I was like the president of our social work club.
Wow.
And at Haskell Indian Nations University, it's a tribal college, and all the students there are members of federally recognized tribes. And with that, we have what we see in our communities. So high rates of poverty, substance use, incidences of suicide.
Wow.
So whenever I started to write my path, because I had to go and find myself, do some soul searching, that's how I ended up in the field. So whenever the campus did have some suicide incidences happen, I did some talking circle training right after that had happened. And it was healing trauma through sacred storytelling. And it was a two-day training, and it was probably 14 hours for both days.
Wow.
So it got really condensed because it's supposed to be a week-long training.
Uh-huh.
And I think I might have been 24 or 25 whenever I went through that training. So I started to center, you know, maintaining our mental health, spiritual health, physical health throughout those years. And then after I graduated, I started to try and pursue a master's at Northeastern State. And my thesis was on what I called the sacred zone. And this was a way to look within yourself as a spiritual being. If you're treating yourself in a sacred way, you're not going to abuse yourself. And if you're able to treat others in a sacred manner, you don't want to abuse them because you love them. You love yourself.
Kind of that old concept, like the body is a temple.
Kind of
crosses those different spiritual lines, right?
And then also being able to connect your different identifiers within yourself, connect to those, because there are parts of ourselves that we can deny or are targeted within certain communities, societies. And that can influence why we're so down on ourselves. We're trying to cope through these situations. And then if you start to connect to your community resources, like, say, Echota Behavioral Health or the National Indian Health Board, you know, these are different community resources that you can learn from and go and teach if you're able to have that open dialogue, again, as spiritual beings, being able to connect in a deep and meaningful way. So that's kind of how I ended up in the field. And then after the talking circles with Echota Behavioral Health, working with the kids there, I've been able to utilize a lot of the stuff I've learned, not only in school, but in travels of conferences, sitting with elders across the world. So
fantastic. Fantastic. Marcella, folks throughout Indian country, they know talking circles, but we have folks from all kinds of backgrounds who tune into the show, and they say, "What are these guys talking about? Talking circles? What is that all about?" Can you give us a quick understanding of what that's all about?
Yes, I've done a few talking circles with my class. What makes it hard for me is when I go into the classroom, you know, they're sitting like in the desks, and I'll say, you know, I really want to have a little talking circle with you, so we're going to just have to take our desks. And I know I rearranged the furniture in all the classrooms I'm in, but the teachers just go right along with it, let me do whatever. And we do put the desks in a circle, and we just talk about different subjects. You know, I talk to the kids about anxiety and depression, anger management, some of the things that they are ready to talk about, and they really are now. I was surprised. I didn't think kids would be ready to talk about those things, but they are. And in a talking circle, they feel a little more comfortable to talk. And as soon as one student shares something, then the next one sitting close will share. And it's just a comfortable environment. And I know I can't make a circle like maybe Caleb can, because he can take his students like outside and do different things. He is located in two schools that are predominantly Native American, and he's been told if you want to take them outside and just sit them on the ground and connect, you know, ground them, you know, through their activities, he can do that. But I have 45 minutes in a classroom, so I have to do exactly what I can do with my talking circle. And sometimes it's just surrounding, you know, the room with that circle of desks, and the kids will still talk. It doesn't matter that we're not outside.
So Caleb, you have formal training in this discipline, if you will. And a lot of folks are thinking, well, okay, I can sit in a circle. I mean, what do you need to be trained to talk in a circle? I mean, I've been in those situations before. What is so special, especially in Indian country, about talking circles, and kind of what's the indigenous power behind this way of coming together?
Yeah, so whenever people hear talking circles, they forget to look at the listening part of that talking circle. So that is where it's really important. If you're able to listen to someone's story, especially as they're learning to open up themselves, we have like shame, and we have to work through shame, and we're always avoiding our emotions. So this talking circle creates that equity within those who sit in the circle. And it provides space for those who may not speak up because they're used to being talked over. That's one of the key differences. They're always having to listen, but now they have the time and space to talk. And I also encourage the students to also be mindful of the time that they spend talking, because you might be taking from someone else because they're finally comfortable. They're about to dive in, but you run out of time, like Marcella had said. So I always try to have them be mindful. And the way I do mine is I do a wellness check as the first question. And then I go in counterclockwise, because that's how we dance in ceremony. We dance in a counterclockwise spiral. So I'll go first, and I will be openly vulnerable, because I've been having to work through my traumas and my shame. And I show them that I'm not a perfect person. Nobody is. If we were perfect, we don't have to deal with all the issues we see in our communities. So I reveal my vulnerabilities, and I will pass it to the person on the right. And if they feel safe sharing, they can talk. And if not, they have the right to pass. So it's not forcing it on them until they see, say, one of their cousins or friends. Once they start to open up, okay, you're going through that too. So maybe what I'm seeing, what I'm feeling isn't unique. So we can relate. And that's what it really is trying to relate within a community and then connect.
I love what you're sharing, and we're talking about people sharing their stories, telling their stories. We've got an amazing story that's represented by the two of you here, and I know it's an amazing story because Dr. Joni Bakavoy told me that, Marcella, you have an amazing story about a health journey, your own health journey, that has inspired her and inspired other people, and I know my listeners want to hear it. I want to hear it, but we've got to step away just briefly, because we've got to take a quick couple of minutes for some important announcements, but I'm trusting that you can both stay by.
Yes.
For sure.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose. I'm with Marcella Morton and with Caleb Proctor. We've got some amazing practical things coming up in our next segment. I encourage you to stay with us. We will be right back after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at aianl.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, aianl.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I have the privilege of continuing to sit with Marcella Morton and with Caleb Proctor. You folks both have deep roots in Indian country. If I understand correctly, both of you grew up around Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a little bit different time frame as far as when you grew up. Is that true?
Just a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. And so... Marcella, you have this amazing story. I've heard about it. And Caleb, I want to see it through your eyes first. We're going to let Marcella tell her story, but you're kind of new colleagues, new friends, I mean, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
How did you hear about this amazing health story that Marcella has?
So with Marcella, she is a life skills teacher. And my favorite teachers are those that can embody the lessons that they are teaching.
Mm.
So I know that they're not going through the motions, and through those life skills is a way of healthy living.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard snippets of some of her health journey throughout some of our events, but, I would really enjoy to have more of the details from Marcella herself.
That's your cue, Marcella. We want to hear this story. Cause I heard, I mean, you can correct me, but I heard you were not the healthiest person at one point in your life and something dramatically changed. So tell us that.
That's true. I was not the healthiest person. I grew up around a lot of good cooks.
Mm.
And so all my life, I've favored sweets. I love sweets. And I was a big eater. So when I reached, I'd been married about 3 years. I just thought getting fatter just went along with motherhood. Mm. I'd had a baby and got married. And my best friend, Janet Lacey, and I, she had married a boy from Van Buren, Arkansas, and the two of us, you know, we kind of kept track of each other, and we both cooked very unhealthy, and ate very unhealthy. And it was one of those things where, you know, we'd been together since sixth grade, and that's all we knew was unhealthy eating. I ate a lot of meals at her mom's house, and we worked at the local dairy freeze, so we had access to burgers and shakes. And, you know, and when you're in high school, you exercise and you don't gain weight, but we both got married right out of high school and started having our children, and we started putting on weight. And we both gained quite a few pounds. And one night she called me and said, "I've got some news for you. I have a health scare here. I don't exactly know what I'm going to do, but I got to go in and have a biopsy." And I was like, "What do you mean a biopsy?" And she said, they think I might have breast cancer. So they're going to do a biopsy and we're going to see how that goes. So she went in, had her biopsy, and sure enough, she had cancer.
Wow.
So she began a journey, and it was a good fight. I mean, she fought cancer. She took chemo and she took radiation, and she lost all of her hair. And it was hard on her husband, hard on her kids, hard on me to see her go through something like that. But, you know, after she finished all of her treatments and everything, they declared her cancer-free.
Tremendous.
And we rejoiced. But do you think we did anything to change our lifestyle? We did not. And that was really a wake-up call for both of us that, you know, we'd been leading this unhealthy life for so long and just thinking that gaining weight and being big women was just a part of getting older. So we did not take her cancer scare seriously. And about 3 years later, her cancer came back.
Wow.
This time, though, she didn't have that fight. She didn't have that drive that she did the first time. And I would go visit her and talk to her, and I'd say, you know, you beat it once, you can beat it again. And one day I took a whole stack of yearbooks, school yearbooks. And I was sitting on the floor next to her, and we were looking through the yearbooks. And she put her hand on my shoulder and said, I want to talk to you about something. I just need to talk to you. Let's put the books away. So we put the books away, and she started talking to me, and she said, I want you to make me a promise. And, you know, she's my best friend, and we'd gone to school together, married at the same time, had kids. Our whole life had been together. And I said, whatever you want me to do, I'll promise. And she said, I guess she could tell by the way I said it that I wasn't, you know, it's just kind of a little, oh, yeah, sure, I'll make you a promise. And she said, well, you have to pinky swear with me. And I said, pinky swear? Because I thought, man, I haven't done that since I was in grade school.
Okay.
And she held her little hand up, and her finger was just shaking because she was so sick with cancer. She held her hand up, and her finger was shaking, and she stuck that little finger out. And I linked pinkies with her. And she said, you have to promise me that you're going to do something about your health. And I said, I will. And she said, say it. And so I had my pinky linked with hers, and I said, I promise you, I'll do something about my health. That was 2 weeks later, and she passed away.
Wow.
And, you know, of course, we had her funeral, and I was real concerned about her girls, and I wanted to try to help her husband with the girls. But I was standing at my kitchen sink one night about 2.5 weeks after she'd passed away doing dishes, and I heard a voice behind me, and it said, you promised me. And I was like, what was that? And I looked around. My husband was in the living room. He had the TV on, and I'm thinking, oh, it's probably the TV. So I go back to washing dishes, and once again, I hear this voice, and it was louder this time, and it said, you promised me. And I knew it was her, and I had this feeling that she was not going to leave me alone until I made the decision to keep that promise. So I dried my hands, went into my bedroom, and I picked out the only pair of athletic shoes that I had. They were covered. The toes were covered with green because those were my lawn mowing shoes.
Okay.
But I put those tennis shoes on, and I went outside, and I walked up and down my lane for 15 minutes. And I didn't like any of it.
Okay.
That was the longest 15 minutes of my life.
You're being honest. I appreciate it.
I am honest.
Yeah.
I looked up at the sky, and I said, is that what you want? Because I didn't want to exercise. I was kind of happy being fat and happy.
Okay.
So I did not really want to exercise, but I started my exercise with that first 15 minutes of walking, and I continued every evening after dinner. I would go out and I walk up and down the lane, and this was in June. And so, you know, in about 2 months, I could tell a difference in the way I felt. I had more stamina. My legs were getting firmer. And I was losing my desire for pop. because we were big pop drinkers.
Okay.
When I would finish my walk, I would come in the house and I wanted water. And that was almost foreign to me because we pretty much drink Pepsi all the time. And that was one of the things that she had told me after she asked me to make that promise. She said, I wish you would stop drinking Pepsi, quit drinking pop, exercise, do something about your health. So my 15 minutes stretched into 30 minutes, and pretty soon I was walking 45 minutes, and then it started getting cold. And I was like, I can't keep this up. I'm cold natured. But, you know, in November, I was still out there walking, and in December, I was still out there walking. And in January, I was still out there walking.
Okay.
But one night, I decided, oh, it is so cold. I think I'm going to try to run a little, and maybe it'll warm me up.
Mm.
And I was still over 200 pounds then.
Wow.
And it's not pretty when a 200-pound woman runs. So I took off running, not fast, but I took off running. And it did warm me up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit surprised because I made it all the way to the fence without collapsing.
How far was that?
Oh, not very far, really.
Okay.
But to me, it felt like a long way.
Sure. You hadn't run in years.
I hadn't run since I was in high school. So I thought, well, you know, that didn't kill me. I think I can run some more. So in January, after she'd passed in June, I would go out there and I'd walk a little bit and then I would take off running. And then I thought, I'm just going to intermittently run, walk, run, walk.
Uh-huh.
And by March, I was running more than I was walking. And I thought, you know what? I might run one of those 5Ks. And I didn't even know how far it was. But I thought, I'm going to try it. So I told my husband, I said, I think I'm ready to run a 5K. And he's like, do you know how far that is? And I said, no, not really. But I believe I can do it. And I said, I think I can do it in under 30 minutes.
Okay.
Because I'd been out there on my own at night. I did it all at night so no one could see me.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought I could do it in under 30 minutes. So in April, I signed up for a run called the Dogwood Run in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. I showed up. I didn't know you had to pay.
Mm.
You have to pay to run a 5K. I did not know that. And I signed my name at the bottom of this little form. And then I started reading a fine print that said they weren't responsible if you had a heart attack or a dog bit you or a car hit you. And I'm thinking, this is a little more than I had planned. But I got right up at the front, and they shot the gun, and I took off running like I'd stolen something. So that was my first 5K, and I finished it in under 30 minutes.
Okay.
And I just got my banana and my drink of water, and I started to leave, and somebody said, oh, don't leave. Maybe you placed. And I'm like, placed? And they said, yeah, they give medals. And I'm thinking, well, at least I want to see what it looks like. So I stayed, and I'd placed second in my age group. So they put that medal around my neck, and I thought it was like I'd won an Olympic medal or something. So that was the beginning of my running.
So what age group were you in? Do you mind telling us?
I was in the 45 to 49 group.
Okay, and had never really run before.
Right. Right.
And here you are getting a medal.
Second place.
Wow.
I felt like it was the Olympics and they had awarded me the gold medal.
This is an amazing story. Had you never heard this,
not
Kayla?
Not all the details, but just in passing.
So you knew she was a championship runner from the very early days, huh?
Not when we first met.
Okay. So we want to talk more about Marcella's story and about how it's impacted you and how the two of you are impacting lives in Indian Country and beyond. We've got to step away just briefly. So am I presuming too much to think that you guys can stay by for another segment or two?
I can stay by.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm still good.
Okay, tremendous. You're listening to Dr. David DeRose, my guests. Next to me, Kayla Proctor. Across from me, Marcella Morton. They're going to be back with more. Don't miss it. We've got a lot more coming up in today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living.
American Indian and Alaska Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I have the privilege of still sitting across from Marcella Morton and sitting next to Caleb Proctor. They've been working throughout Indian country, especially in the central part of Indian country, used to be known as Indian territories, not necessarily for good reasons, but we're glad that you guys have been sharing your journey. Caleb, before we go back to Marcella's story, her health journey, I understand that this story is not like a secret, but that Marcella shares this in appropriate settings with kids. What do you notice when she's speaking with younger children about the kind of health journey?
Marcella brightens up because the changes happened in a dark time in life mm-hmm. and had dark influences, but it was a positive outcome to mm-hmm. make life-changing habits shifts.
I love your emphasis because a lot of times we look at something bad that happens and we focus on the bad instead of the good. We focus mm-hmm. on the death of the loved one, like your friend Marcella, mm-hmm. instead of focusing on that charge that she gave you, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know as some of my listeners were listening, they said, well, you know, this voice that spoke to you, whether it was a commitment, whether it was an angel, some people say, oh, it's the departed spirit of your friend. We're not going to get into a spiritual discussion about that. But the point is, I believe that the Creator was inspiring you to take care of your health. And, you know, people can debate what actually happened there. But the fact is that you got that message very clearly. You changed your life. And you told us off air, Marcella, that you've kind of envisioned writing a book about your life.
Right.
My friend here, Caleb, is already laughing because you've got a catchy title for the book. What would you call it?
I would call it From Spud to Stud because I was truly a couch potato.
Okay.
Until I started working on this promise that I made to Janet, because I went from age 47, that's when she passed away, and I started my running journey, and at age 52, I ran the Boston Marathon.
Now, you got to break this down for us, because not just anybody can just say, hey, I'm going to sign up and run the Boston Marathon, right?
Well, that's what I said. And then my husband said, do you know that you have to qualify for that? And I'm thinking, wow, he knows a lot about running to not be a runner.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, well, maybe I better look it up. So I researched the Boston Marathon just a little, and I found out you had to run a qualifying time.
Mm.
So I set that as my goal to run the Boston Marathon in her honor.
Wow.
And I worked so hard, and I had two training partners, and they knew what I wanted to do. They uh-huh. knew my goal, and they were willing to help me train. And I went the first year to try to qualify, And I went by myself, and I went to Dallas White Rock. And when I walked up to the starting line, I went right up at the front, and I looked around me, and I was intimidated by all the skinny, big, barrel-chested. They just looked so like professional runners, and I was still weighing like 150 pounds, and I'm thinking, if I fall, I could crush one of these people up here. I need to move back. So I put myself back in the starting line. I moved myself back. And, you know, I ran and I missed my qualifying time by 7 minutes and 42 seconds.
Wow.
So if I had stayed up front that first attempt, I would have probably qualified the first time.
Now, I'm doing the math here.
Yeah.
And when I heard you starting this story, you were over 200.
Yes.
And now you're talking about being heavy and weighing 150.
Yes.
So here we are. You've already lost 50 pounds. And it's not just the running, because you've made some dietary changes as well.
Exactly. Yes. But as a runner, 148, you're considered a filly. That's a heavyweight runner.
Okay. Okay.
As a woman.
Okay. Well, thanks for giving us the terminology here. Okay. So we're back with the story here. You don't qualify the first time you run a marathon.
Right.
What happened from there?
Well, I had to go back and tell all my students. You know, they knew that I was training. They knew I was going to go to White Rock, and they knew I wanted to qualify for Boston. And so I went down there all alone, towed the line, and I doubted myself. So I moved myself back. And when I crossed the finish line, it was a struggle to call home and tell my husband, my daughters, that I didn't qualify, didn't make it. But I had to come back and face a whole group of kids.
Wow.
And I walked into that classroom and I said, I didn't make it. I didn't qualify. But I promise you, I'll go back and I will do it again and I will qualify. And a little voice at the back of the classroom said, no, you won't. And I looked back there and I said, Jesse, was that you? And he said, yeah. Who would want to go back and do that? Who would want to put themselves through all that training and do it all again? And I said, me, to show you that I can do it, because I know I can. And so the next year in December, I even had myself made a sweatshirt, and it said, I qualified on the front. It said, I qualified on the back, because I thought, when I walk into that classroom this year, all I have to do is go like this, because I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
So I buy this shirt and had I qualified put on there. And my husband said, that's pretty cocky. Uh-huh. And I said, no, I'm sure that I can do it. So I went back with a different plan. I took my daughters with me, and they were at the finish line. And every time I would get tired, I would think, they're going to get tired of me, you know, trying year after year and not making it. So I've got to get with it. So every time I'd get tired, I'd push myself a little harder. And I reached mile 24, and I was getting tired. And there was a long straight stretch, and then I saw it turn left. And I saw this woman step out like in front of me, and she was waving her arms. And I'm thinking, lady, you better get out of the way, because I'm trying to do something here, and I don't even have the strength to get around you.
Wow.
And I'm very nearsighted, but the closer I got, the more I realized it was my daughter, my youngest daughter, and she was screaming, Mama, you better hurry up. You're not going to make it if you don't hurry up. And I'm thinking, she must know something that I don't know, because I was thinking I was going to finish this thing with extra time. But, you know, I might be tired, but she knows that I'm not going to qualify, so I got to hurry.
Uh-huh.
Well, she was just doing that because she said, I knew it'd either make you mad or scare you. And so, man, I took off and I crossed that finish line. And when I did, I looked up at the clock and I had almost 3 minutes to spare. And I would walk along and I would say, I just qualified for Boston. I just qualified for Boston. And they would just pat me on the back and go, okay. They probably thought I was delirious.
I want to hear from Caleb. So I don't, have you heard this story?
Yeah, just, again, just in bits and pieces.
Okay. But imagine if you're, Caleb, imagine you're that student the year before. and Mrs. Morton came in and said what she was going to do. And you're saying, no way. And then she comes back in with the I qualified shirt. Because I'm assuming that's where it went, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what would your reaction be to that?
Probably shock, disbelief, and I would need evidence just because.
Okay.
It's like, where'd you buy that from? Did you really? But, you know, after hearing the actual stories with it, you know, again, I like to listen to teachers that embody the lessons they're giving. So hearing the whole story again would really reinforce, hey, you know, if you really have drive and the spirit for it, you can really achieve your dreams and goals if you set them. So
it was Caleb's response, one that you heard? Did some people doubt that you had really qualified?
Yes, and it was Jesse. Jesse, the same boy. Yes,
okay,
and you
okay.
know, that boy has so much respect for me today. He just respects me like you would not believe. Because he said, yes, I was that little voice in the back of the room that said, no, you won't. And he said, you could have gotten mad at me that day, but you didn't. You just said, you watch. I will do it. I will go back. And so the next year, he wasn't in that class, but mm-hmm. I found him. I went to his class, and when I knocked on the door, because I knew Jesse was in that uh-huh. classroom, I had already alerted the teacher. I said, I'm just going to walk in and face the classroom and then turn around, and they're going to see it front and back. Uh-huh. He's like, okay, because Jesse was in that room. But he has such great respect for me now, not just as an athlete, but mm-hmm. as a person, who said, uh-huh. I know I can do it. I'm going to go back and show you that there's not anything that you can't achieve if you try hard enough.
Now, Caleb, I know you have a journey too. Mm-hmm. And as you talk with students, you develop rapport. I know you and Marcella are a team, often working together. What is it in your story that you find inspires young people?
Just being authentic with the kids. I had to face some hardships in life, and I've had to adapt and grow through them. Some of the stuff I've had to learn was either get stuck with post-traumatic stress disorder, or you can focus on post-traumatic growth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I try to embody, is like, things will happen to you. Life isn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm able to give you the lessons I wish I had when I was a kid, you have a better likelihood for good outcomes. And again, life isn't going to be perfect. That is something I try to instill in the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing what I can on the outside realm to make sure that you don't have to face what some of our people have to face, but I can't do it all. And then I also tell the kids that I can't change the world by myself. So like, one of my lessons is a seed ball activity. We have pollinator seeds, and there's a couple dozen. And I've created a word search with our Katua language on those, what those seeds are. And we have a clay matrix, which is clay, soil, a little bit of fertilizer. And this is a lesson on responsibility. If you're able to look at your responsibilities, not only within to yourself, to your family, to your community, but expand that into your environment, your homelands, you start to see how far our responsibilities actually go.
Mm-hmm.
And if our communities can focus on that responsibility to us, again, we'll be feeling safe and sacred. So that's one of the lessons. And one of my kids, whenever we was doing this activity, and she really looked at me and she said, Caleb, are you really trying to save the butterflies? And I was like, yeah, and I need your help. Can you please help me? You know, and then she just kind of smiled and she said, yeah, you know, that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell the kids, whenever we do this activity, take it home, take it to your caretaker, because you don't know what their home life is like.
Right,
do they have their parents? Are they with their grandparents? Are they with the aunt or uncle? And I just tell them, take this to wherever you feel like home is and throw these seed balls out there. You know, if you're with your mom, these will be some pretty flowers for your mom or your grandma. I made some for Marcella, and she had some real pretty flowers by her rosebush.
They're beautiful.
Okay. But, so a lot of practical ways to engage with kids, share from your own experiences. Now, we have to go back to your story, Marcella, because I know the goal wasn't just to qualify for the Boston Marathon, but it was actually to run in it, right?
That's right. That's
so did
right.
you get an opportunity to do that?
Yes, I did. I qualified in December, and I went on April 21st, 2003. I went to Boston, and my oldest daughter and her husband came, and they met me there. And when they shot the gun, I ran for 12 minutes before I ever even got to cross the starting line, because 22,000 people, and it's a very narrow road, and they put the fast-paced people there up at the very front, five-minute milers and then the six-minute milers. And of course, I was back in about the eight, nine-minute milers. So I ran for about 12 minutes before I ever got to cross the starting line. And then I ran so hard the first few miles, you know, because I was just excited. I was just happy to be there. And then about mile 20, that's when the hills start at Boston. And man, they were tough. But I just kept going and running. And when I crossed the finish line, you know, it really didn't matter how fast I ran it there, because I was there.
Right.
So I ran it in 4 hours and 27 minutes, which I was kind of embarrassed of. But then I'm thinking, I looked behind me and there was a whole bunch of people back behind. So I did okay.
Uh-huh.
But when I crossed the finish line, I got my little bag and started back for the hotel. And I found I had lost 7.5 pounds and 8 toenails.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
That's a quick weight loss process, isn't it?
We've got a final segment, and I know you guys have been gracious. We spoke off air before this segment. You're going to stay by for the final segment. I know you've got some other very practical things to share with our listeners. So I'm talking with Marcella Morton and with Caleb Proctor. We've got a final segment of today's episode. Stay by. I'm Dr. DeRose. We'll be back with more.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose with the distinct privilege of speaking with two people who are making a big difference in Indian country and sharing their enthusiasm here at the National Tribal Health Conference. We are in Phoenix, Arizona, the environs of Phoenix. We are here September of 2025. The National Indian Health Board and other sponsors have pulled together a great meeting, many people sharing indigenous wisdom. Two of them with me right now, Marcella Morton and Caleb Proctor. Marcella, we've been speaking about your journey from, as you put it, from spud to stud.
Yes.
Okay, from couch potato to fitness enthusiast runner, running in the Boston Marathon. You told me something off air during our break that I was really inspired by. Tell us a little bit about the community of Boston when you were running the marathon.
Boston is held on Patriots Day, and literally the whole town just shuts down. There's no school, and the crowd just shows up, and the streets everywhere are lined with people.
Mm.
And what really made me excited was to see how many kids were there. And I don't ever like to run in the center of a group of people because I'm always afraid if I trip, all the people behind me are just going to run right over me. Mm. So I made sure I was on the edge.
Okay.
And that was a perfect place to be because I could see all these little kids ahead of me, and they would have trays of orange slices or little cups of orange juice or just one of the little wet sponges in case you were sweating. And a lot of them just wanted to high-five you. That's all they wanted, just a high-five from one of the runners. So to me, I thought, you know, look at the community. I could look out across the people on both sides, and you couldn't even see the end of it. People were just standing everywhere, standing up on embankments. And when we came around near the end, I don't think I've ever seen that many people in my life gathered for a race. They had stands. The stands were filled, and people were just reaching out, wanting to touch one of the runners. So it was just like the whole city just got involved, and they wanted to share. They wanted to give you coffee, and I was like, I can't drink coffee and run. They had water, and they had oranges, some of the most unusual things I saw offered during the Boston Marathon. So to me, I thought it was really special because everybody was just wanting to be a part of it, saying, I gave that runner an orange, you know, slice, or I gave them a cup of water. So I tried to interact with them as much as I could.
So Caleb, this really speaks to me about the kind of work that a lot of people are doing. There's a saying that people are talking about here about community. Tell us what's behind that.
So the way I look at it is if everyone does a little bit, no one has to do a lot. And that is how I try to center our community work. Our community may not know what to do, so they don't know how to work together. And one of our community values is actually Gadugi, work together as a community for a better future. So that's what we really try to bring about in the community, is our life skills as a form of self-care. And I let the students know, once you learn that, teach someone else, and it becomes communal care. Learn to take care of each other. Another value we have is Uliskeiti Dejidaye Lunseisti, and that means treat all life as sacred. So that's how we need our communities to be. And some forms of that could be an activity we like to do is raise a ball pole. We have one of our traditional ball games, stick ball, and the tour program helps fund putting a ball pole in each of our districts. And we have a traditional stick maker who will go get the post, prep it in the old ways, and then we'll invite the community again to this site, and then we'll have a raising of the ball pole. So we really encourage the youth to come and help out, because a lot of them are picking up stick ball. It's an amazing community game, and the ball game represents a healthy community because we like to be stationary as Catua Cherokee people. We have our farms, we have our towns, we have our fire, and we have our ball game.
Okay.
So we need to work together to make sure our community is healthy and safe and good. So we really take pride in our ball pole project.
So you're connecting with these traditional values, but you're also taking advantage of kind of new media, and you folks are out there on the web. Folks may want to connect with you, whether they're living in Oklahoma or whether they say, boy, these folks just have some interesting stories. I'd love to see what they're doing. How does someone connect with you?
On Facebook is probably the easiest way. Echota Behavioral Health has a Facebook page, and anytime we have an event, we share it on Facebook. We have a lot of pictures there. That's where, when we have an event, we try to take pictures and share those. So probably Facebook would be the best place to connect with us.
So now you guys can spell Echota, but there's a lot of folks who say, what are they saying? How do they find you on Facebook?
Okay. Echota is E-C-H-O-T-A.
Okay. Echota. And is that an ancient Cherokee word? Or?
Yeah, that's one of our traditional towns. So there is a Treaty of New Echota and an Echota ceremonial ground. So Echota has a significant background and history to its name.
Okay, so Echota Behavioral Health.
Right.
Look you guys up on Facebook. I can connect with you, connect with your community.
Yes.
For folks who say, boy, I wish we had people like Marcella, wish we had people like Caleb in our community. Maybe they're Native American, but they're in an urban area. They don't really feel connected with other indigenous peoples. What kind of messaging do you have to them? Maybe they're struggling. They listened to your stories and they say, well, I'm in that SPUD category. You know, I'm not at a place where I feel healthy. I'm worried about cancer, or I'm worried about mental health issues. What do you say to those folks?
I think it takes small changes because, you know, when I started with that first 15 minutes of walking, and then I did not eat healthy, and I knew that. But as I started to walk, my diet changed. I began to drink water. I ate more healthy foods. And then I just decided, you know, I feel so much better since I started this journey. And that's when I started encouraging other people, you know, look at me. If I can do it, you can do it. And then it was very powerful with kids because they didn't want to really look at a 47-year-old woman and think I was a runner. And then they would see me running on the roads, and they'd be like, I saw you running the other day. And then they would say, are you training for something? And then they just would get all involved in what I was doing. So to me, just being out there and the kids seeing me running, and I would bring medals when I would get medals. I would bring medals to the classroom and share with them. And it just made them feel like they could do it. So, and I think that's a lot with adults too. When I've shared my story, they say, you just make me feel like I want to run, or I want to do something. So to me, that promise that I kept to Janet has been kept. I really feel like it has.
It's hard to argue with that. Caleb, what about you?
Be intentional in the steps that you want to make. And then once you find the path that feels right to you, embody it. Don't go through the motions. That's one of the hardest things to do, is to embody those changes you need to make in your own life. If you're going through the motions, you start to hesitate. You don't believe in it in yourself. So if you're wanting to learn your traditional ways of life, be intentional whenever you go find elders and show up. Show up consistently. Show up and support the elders. Show up for yourself. And whenever you're consistent with your intentions, you'll start to build your worth within yourself. And elders will see that as well. And then they may pass on some wisdom. And then be intentional in how you're involved in your community. Community is the center of our indigenous identities, but we're a part of many communities. So find the communities of where you're at and try to make it better. If you're making it worse, you're not being a good relative. And that's what we need to be, is good relatives.
I hear a powerful message coming from both of you, and that is, don't just sit where you're at. There's room for improvement. Take some encouragement from Marcella's story. Take some encouragement from Calvin and his journey. And even though it may not seem like you're making a big step or a big change, we can all be part of moving in the right direction individually and for our communities. Am I hearing you guys right?
That's correct.
People want to get a hold of you. You've already told us Facebook is the best way to do it. One more time, what do they need to remember? What do my listeners need to remember if they want to connect with you guys?
Echota Behavioral Health, and we are on Facebook.
Caleb, spell that Echota one more time.
E-C-H-O-T-A.
Thank you guys both so very much. You pulled away from a lot of excitement here. Thank you for sharing your stories, your enthusiasm with my listeners.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, what on?
We have to step away on that note. I just again want to thank Caleb Proctor and Marcella Morton for joining me. Thank you, each listener, for joining us today for this edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. As always, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.